suddenly feels very small, doesn't it, when we're in the house or in our little huts and the wind is howling outside. The Buddha called it a disturbance of the wind element. Perhaps our little planet has finally had enough and wants to blow us all out into space. One day, it's at the moment it's just kind of got that tickle in its nose, and then the next day, after a couple of days, it'll sneeze, and then we'll be floating with all the debris. Insubstantial and forgotten. Just floating out there into space. You know, so I think it's quite a good reflection to look at the stars and see the enormity of things. Of course, in the Western religions, Abrahamic religions, the notion of space is very challenging because the world was supposed to be built around us. We're the center of the world, everything revolves around us. Of course, if you read that in a psychological sense, then it's of course a highly narcissistic point of view, isn't it? The idea that everything in the world is there because of me. Buddhism looks at it in two ways. In the big sense, the cosmic sense, the world doesn't really care about us at all. It just does its thing, and the world doesn't revolve around us, but actually is huge and vast. Incomprehensibly so. That's in the external sense. On the internal sense, however, the world really does revolve around us. And of course, the problem that the Abrahamic religions had was that they confused one with the other. They confused the psychological reality that the world, as we experience it, revolves around us with the cosmological reality, which of course where it doesn't. When we hear those winds howling around outside, it reminds us, or it should remind us, of the impermanence and the frailty of things, the lack of substance. Everything can get blown over, even the tall trees being blown over just in a moment. These things can happen. In Christchurch, New Zealand, the ground in some places turned liquid. The earth element, so disturbed, things would just be sucked into the earth. Living in the bush in Australia, we don't need to be reminded of the disturbance of the fire element, how out of control and how powerful that can be. And in a world where the reality of both water shortages and also flooding are becoming more and more apparent, we also don't need to be reminded of the impermanence and the lack of substance and reliability of the water element. These things are fragile. The fact that these are all present in the kind of the right mixture here on Earth is one of the great problems in physics and cosmology. They call the Goldilocks problem. Why is everything just right? Such a rare thing to find. And we've looked with our science through the solar system and tried to look further into the different solar systems, different stars, different galaxies, and so far we haven't found anything like what there is here. I mean, I think probably we will do one day, but so far we haven't found it. Certainly you have to go a long way before you find anywhere as pleasant as the Earth. It's curious though that even though the earth and the place that we live on is so beautiful, so bountiful, that we manage to really stuff it up so badly. And we manage to, for all the gifts that we're given, all of the astonishing abundance of the air that we breathe, the water that we drink, the earth that we stand on, the food that we eat, and this astonishing and so such rare abundance, we take for granted so readily. And if we look into the world outside the monastery, you can see the desperation, the endless search for some kind of new gizmo or clothes or food or whatever. It's kind of this notion we have of consumer, being a consumer. It's a very apt turn of phrase, because it's as if we're eating all of these things. We're actually consuming, bringing them in, making them part of ourselves. It's as if there's a huge hole in the middle of us, which we're trying to fill. It's as if there's a hole in the middle of the world. And we spend our lives trying to fill that hole, chasing after the happy things, running away from the sad things. And we're always trying to fill that. We try to fill that with sex, or we try to fill it with food, or we try to fill it with entertainment, or on a somewhat more meaningful level, we fill that with relationships. We have family, we have friends who we put in one container, we say we like them, and we try to be with them. But of course it's very difficult. We can't always just be with them. This is why in the First Noble Truth it says, Yehi vipayogo dukho, separation from the loved is suffering. And sometimes instead of being with the loved ones, we're apyehi sampayogo dukho, together with those that we don't like. It's also as dukkha. And we try to our relationships and friendships and family and so on, these are like a coping mechanism that help us to deal with the hole inside us. We think that somehow we can become whole through having a partner, or we can become fulfilled through having a family. And some of the old myths talk about this, and you find this idea both in the Upanishads, also in Plato. They talk about this ancient idea of that humanity started out as a whole, but then separated into two halves, man and woman. And since then have been trying to reunite, trying to become one again. But of course it never really works, except for just a short period of time. The reality is that we always stay separate. That's how we are. And so as much as we try to fill our life with the happiness of being with friends, being with people who love us, it's the same people who are the ones who bring us sadness. And this was the truth which was so hard for King Pasenadi to accept. And when King Pasenadi was talking with his wife Malika, and she said that he said that, oh, because of all my family, all the people around me, this is why I'm happy. And Malika said, no, those who are dear to us bring us great suffering. Pasenadi was very upset with this, as you would be. And how can you say that? And she said, well, that's what the Buddha said. And he says, oh, Buddha, everything that Buddha says, you always have to agree with him, don't you? So they went to see the Buddha, and the Buddha said, well, what about your daughter? Do you love your daughter? He said, yes, I love my daughter very much. And he said, well, what would happen if she was to get sick or if she was to die? And he said, oh, I'd be so sad. I'd be filled with grief. I don't know how I could cope. I don't know if I'd be able to go on living. And he said, this is what I meant when I said that those who are dear to us bring us sadness and suffering. So this is the reality of things, and this is why we try to fill our lives, fill that hole in our lives through these things, and it never actually works really, does it? And actually you can see this in marriage and when people have partnerships, that, you know, for many people, you know, it's good and you hope that they have the best, but the reality is that after you've got married and then, you know, get on with life and well, things go back pretty much to normal, you know. Maybe, you know, better, but then some other things are worse, and then you want something else to fill your life. Maybe have children. And that does something, it fulfills some kind of need. But then that also becomes a source of sadness as well. And there's also, inevitably, there's a separation, there's a disappointment. And that's how it always is in the world. As long as we're trying to find our happiness through filling that hole in our heart with all of these things, this is what we're going to be doomed to find. Or another one that we use is like work. Work is also something that's very important for human beings. And I'm sure you all know that generally speaking, people when they're unemployed tend to be more depressed or not as happy, unless they're musicians, of course, in which case it's just normal. But most people when they're unemployed, like if they're really unemployed, then they're more not as happy as when they're working. You have some kind of meaning, some kind of purpose. If when you're working, you're using your skills, you're doing things, contributing, part of a team. Whatever efforts you make, you can see they actually have a result. You're actually accomplishing something. And accomplishing something which is of benefit for yourself, of benefit for others. And so it's good, it feels good to do that. It feels good to use your skills. It feels good to learn new skills. It feels good to work with others, to help and to develop things. So working is also an important need, but it doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't really fulfill that hole in our heart. So these things ultimately are just coping mechanisms. They're ways we can get by more or less success for a longer or shorter period of time. But they don't really answer that problem. And I believe this is why we have religion in the world. This is why we have this thing we call spirituality, where there is a sense somehow that there's a higher meaning and that our life can only be really fulfilled when it's somehow in tune with that higher sense of purpose. Of course, I take it for granted that when I say religion or spirituality, I don't mean that has to be in terms of, you know, some kind of institutional or organized religion or whatever. I'm just saying that there's some kind of dimension there which is not satisfied merely by these other things. A higher consciousness, if you like. And one of the things about this higher consciousness is that it requires letting go of those things that have come before. What is that beautiful phrase? I can't remember the quote exactly, but I'm sure most of you are familiar with it. It's something like, when I was young, I played with childish things, and I enjoyed those childish things, and they made me happy. And when I grew older, I grew out of those childish things. I put away the childish things. So this is that notion of growth. You know, when I was younger, I wanted to be a pilot in the Air Force. And my mum told me I was colorblind, so I couldn't do it. So that's why I never did that one. But we've all seen that in our own lives, haven't we? That in certain periods of our life, certain phases of our life, there are certain things that are good and useful and helpful. And at a certain time in our life, we realize actually it's time to leave those things behind. Time to move on. Not because there's anything wrong with them, just because they're not going to fulfill us anymore. And the thing about that is you really can't go back. And this is something which has been validated by psychological studies, longitudinal studies, that show essentially that moral and spiritual development is a one-way street. You can't really go backwards. You can try, but it won't really work for very long. When you're going through that process of development, there's a simple pattern which you can recognize in that developmental process. The first part of it is that there's like a recognition, an understanding that where I'm at is inadequate. It might not even come with a recognition. It might be an unconscious thing. But it can be made, if it's made conscious, it's like a recognition that where I'm at is inadequate, a reaching after something new, and a letting go of what was before. And that's pretty essential. It's essential that what was there before has to be let go of. If we try to do both, we're definitely going to fail. We have to have something higher to hold on to while we let go of something lower. And in the short term, that letting go process often involves a certain repulsion, a certain force to actually push something away, to separate. There needs to be some kind of psychic energy there to actually push something away. Of course, that pushing away is a subtle form of aversion. It's not peaceful, but may be necessary, at least for a temporary period of time. Push away what's lower. Push away what those things that we know have left behind. Those things that we know have fulfilled their function. They were helpful for a time. They did certain things for us, but they also had disadvantages. And we now recognize that those advantages and those disadvantages are a pair. They always go together. We can't have the good without the bad. We can't have the love without the hate. We can't have the good times without having the arguments. You can't have the day without having the night. So it's time to move on, and those things have to be pushed away until you feel safe, until you've grabbed hold of the next rung on the ladder, so to speak, and you're confident with that. And then you don't have to push anymore. You're confident where you are, and it's not an issue. And that process keeps on going. It doesn't get easier. It keeps being challenging. In fact, it probably gets more difficult, I'd say. Well, it's hard to say, but I think when we're younger, I think the course of development is, even though it feels very painful, it's perhaps faster when we're younger, but it's more kind of widely recognized. It's kind of reflected in, you know, where we hang around with kids our own age. At a similar developmental level, we go to school where that developmental level is taken account of, and so on and so forth. So there's a fairly well recognized progression there, which sort of gives some structure to it. But actually, once we get older, once we're in our 20s, that becomes much less the case. People's development proceeds at very different speeds, and there's very much fewer cultural markers and signifiers to tell us where we should be at. So we're much more on our own and much more having to reflect about what our own personal journey is, where that's leading. And so for the people here in this monastery, we've come here because we've recognized that. We recognize that we want to escape from this dualism of favoring and opposing, loving and hating, liking and disliking. We want to have more of a sense of equanimity about the world, compassion for the world, but not getting involved in the world, like the lotus with the dewdrops that come off it. It doesn't mean we don't care about things. We still care, but we don't get so caught up in it, that's all. We do what we can and let go. It's a very fine balance. It's easy to tip over to the side of just indifference and not caring. That's one extreme. It's also easy to tip over into that extreme of just getting over caught up in things, getting over identified with them. It's hard to keep that light touch about things, to speak when it's necessary to speak, to be silent when it's necessary to be silent, to act when it's useful to act, to be still when it's useful to be still. Always I see this in spiritual life, the tendency again and again and again is to just go to extremes. If you've got to be, you know, if being quiet is good, then that means we have to be completely and utterly silent all the time and never say anything. If stillness is good, then we have to like make a resolution to force our body to be still. I got an email with this question a few days ago. Apparently there's some people teaching meditation like that, that you have to make a resolution, I'm going to force my body to be still for the next hour. And that's what stillness means. And I had to write back to this person and say, no, that's not what stillness is at all. Look at what the Buddha said in the suttas. Stillness doesn't come from any kind of making yourself be still. Stillness arises when there's letting go. Stillness arises when there's contentment. Stillness arises when there's nothing that you want. Stillness arises when the body is full of rapture and joy and happiness and bliss and is so content and so full that it just doesn't want to go anywhere. That's stillness. So when all of these things come into our mind, likes and dislikes, favoring, opposing, yada yada yada, just shove it off. Just don't have anything to do with it. It's all just silliness. So what? Good and bad? No such thing as good and bad, except for fonts, of course. There are exceptions. And then you realize that the great secret of life, the great secret of practice, and what I think actual spiritual practice is a realization that there's no hole in the world in the first place. It's not that there's a hole there and we have to fill it up, but it's a realization that the whole world is a hole. The whole world is empty. It's not that we're somehow special because we have an emptiness inside us. It's a realization that all of those things that we're seeking to fill ourselves with are just as empty as that hole is. Just as hollow. And that's why it never works. It's not because we need one more thing, it's because all of those things are just empty. And we're like somebody who's got a hole to fill and they're shoveling air and trying to put air into the hole and saying, I'm filling it with air. It's natural for us to be empty. It's natural for there to be a hole. That's what emptiness means. That's what not self means. It's not that we have this mistaken impression that there's a hole there, which is like what the kind of positive psychology people think. Nor is it that somehow there's a hole that, and that means there's something wrong with us and we have to fill it. The wrongness isn't the fact that there's a hole. The wrongness is that we have an expectation that there should be anything else. It's not about filling the hole. It's about letting go of our expectation. It's about recognizing that's what it's like. Life is just this. Happiness is just happiness. Sadness is just sadness. Thoughts are just thoughts. Memories are just memories. Wishes are just wishes. Sights are just sights. Life is just life. That's all. No more, no less. So this is up for us, not to change all those things, just to let go, just to understand. That's how it is. You can fight it all you like. You're never going to win. You can fight the reality all you like. You will never, ever, ever win. You just get more and more worn out trying. That's what the Buddha said in the Attadanda Sutta, there's a dart that's hidden deep inside the heart and that causes us to run around to all the four directions. And when you can see that dart and pull it out, like a thorn. There's a thorn in the heart. Pull it out. And then you neither run nor do you get stuck in one place. But you become free. You become free. So this is that sense of lightness of heart which you feel when you let go. When we let go of our attachments. All of those things we're worried about, suddenly it's not such a big deal. Oh, it's okay. It's alright. these things outside us, the things inside us too. When we're practicing in a monastery, we always have the one of the traps that we can get caught in is getting too focused on externals. We can get too caught up with our job or our duties or something like that, and we can think that they're so important and we have to do them all the time and so on and so forth. And so we can get into to just distracting ourselves through doing those jobs rather than reflecting and understanding, well, actually, if I do this work, if I do this service to help people, then that's something that's good. And by doing it, I can develop my mindfulness, my energy, my commitment, my dedication, and all of those good qualities. And so we should investigate if, when we're working, if we see that it's leading to an increase in wholesome dhammas and a decrease in unwholesome, then we should do it, we should do more of it. If we see it's leading to an increase in unwholesome dhammas and a decrease in wholesome dhammas, then we need to maybe inquire into that, maybe change what we're doing or change our approach to it. Work itself is neither good nor bad, but we just have to look at what effect it has both on us and on others. So this is one kind of extreme we can have in the monastery, and of course the other extreme is very, very prevalent and very hard to get around, is the extreme of narcissism. It's all me, me, me. I have all of these things, I want them, I deserve them. This huge sense of entitlement, which is so, unfortunately, common in monasteries. We think that somehow we deserve having our food cooked for us every day. Somehow we deserve to have such a lovely place to stay. We deserve to have how many hours of free time in the day and all of these kinds of things. No, we really don't deserve any of that stuff at all, because we don't have any right to it. It's all a blessing, it's a gift. And we all should experience what it's like to not have that gift. And people, people come to me and they ask, oh, I want to go traveling because I want to go and stay in some retreat, or I want to go and stay with some teacher or something like that. But I tell you what, going and staying with the best teacher in the world, it's not really going to do you very much, to be honest. I'll tell you what's going to do a lot better, and I'm happy to support anyone who wants to do that. Just walk down the road, sleep under a tree, feel what it's like to just be nobody, to not deserve anything. I've done it, it didn't hurt me. What's it like to just walk, to get off a bus in a town you've never been in, and just walk down the road and not have the faintest clue where your next meal is going to come from or where you're going to sleep. And to stay in places that are filthy, dirty, that are places that are dangerous, places that are full of bugs and mosquitoes and all kinds of things, and really uncomfortable. When you do that, you realize actually that's just how fast it can be to go from a life of pampered luxury, like we have here at Santi Monastery, to a life of really just nothing at all. Really just not knowing what is around the corner. So these two extremes, when we get too involved in ourselves, when we're practicing, when we're spending many hours in seclusion by ourselves, we're just sitting there looking at our navel all day, we begin to think that our navel is such an important thing. My belly button is the most important belly button in the whole world. My belly button is the belly button of the universe. The whole world revolves around my belly button. Oh, sacred belly button fluff, I take thee out and offer thee to the world. But that's how we think, isn't it? We can laugh, but my feelings are so important. I feel sad, therefore that's something really important. I feel happy, therefore I must be such a great meditator. I have some good peace of mind, therefore I'm better meditator than all of these other people. I'm full of depression, therefore that's the most important thing, and why doesn't everybody else recognize my pain? Why don't they feel my pain with me? And so we get so caught up in our own issues, our own problems, our own dilemmas. And we forget to look around and realize actually everybody else here is going through their own issues, their own dilemmas, their own feelings, their own emotions. That's what we're here for. There's nothing unusual about it. Nothing wrong with it. It's just that's what we're here for. We're not here for any other purpose. So we just let go of all those things. Feelings are just feelings. Thoughts are just thoughts. Emotions are just emotions. Let them go. Be free. Be free of all of those things. So this is my little Dhamma talk for you this evening on emptiness and freedom. So I offer this for your reflection.